It is 16 minutes past 9 Central African Time. Assalamu alaikum and welcome back to Under the Radar here on Radio Islam International. We focus on research that has been out for a few months already, but as we try and look back at the year that was, a very difficult year for South Africa, a very difficult year for the world. Important to, as a society, reflect on what did we do, what did we not do, what has this taught us about our nation, and what perhaps were some of the challenges, some of the oversights, and how should this inform the way we respond to different variants of the current crisis or future crises altogether. Research from the University of Johannesburg in October saying that the lockdown, a hard lockdown, didn't work in South Africa. Why it shouldn't happen again. Our special guest at this hour, Professor Benjamin T. Smart. He is a leader of the Future of Health and Medicine Research theme at the Institute for the Future of Knowledge. He's also Associate Professor of Philosophy at the University of Johannesburg. Professor, thank you so much for your time. Good evening and welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Professor, to start off with the conclusion that your team came to, that the lockdown didn't work in South Africa, just break that down for us. Are we talking about the hard lockdown in particular?
Yes, I think it's important to be very clear on that point. It's not that interventions, non-pharmaceutical interventions, weren't at all effective. Mitigation strategies were effective. What our research shows, we think, is that the hard lockdown, the level 5 lockdown, is no more effective than essentially the basic mitigation strategies that we actually still have in place right now.
Mm-hmm. So the fact that you've raised this question, that in retrospect it would always be easy to say that something worked or something had not worked, and therefore, you know, one cannot become perhaps too judgmental later on, looking at decisions that were made in unprecedented circumstances. But at the same time, you argue that one could have seen the devastating impact and the minimal contribution that a hard lockdown would have made to the COVID situation in South Africa. What are you saying there?
Sure. So I think, first of all, it's important to note that we knew from the start the devastating effect on the economy that a hard lockdown would have in a country like ours, in a essentially developing world country. Lockdown's going to have an even bigger effect on the economy than it would in countries like Europe and America. And so you're always looking at a cost-benefit analysis in this kind of situation. Although we were in unprecedented times, of course they're not unprecedented anymore. When something happens, it's no longer unprecedented. We were in unprecedented times. It is possible to look at the contextual conditions that our people live in and see that lockdown-style strategies, the level 5-style strategies, are unlikely to be overly successful in our context, simply because people live in such high population density conditions in townships and urban areas. Not everyone, of course, this is one of the most unequal countries in the world. However, a large proportion of the country do live in high population density areas where lockdown is simply impossible, even with the best of intentions. So in those kind of situations, what might happen, and it seems what might have actually happened, is you get a lot of people getting infected anyway and a lot of social contact anyway, and the economy shuts down in addition. So you end up with essentially a worse of both worlds situation. Now, it's very easy, as we said in our research, to jump on the government and get very upset. However, you know, there was a lot of pressure. The World Health Organization were pushing lockdowns as a non-pharmaceutical intervention. It was what all the countries were doing elsewhere. You know, it was what they were doing in Europe where the virus hit first. And it seemed like best practice at the time. So it's difficult not to be overly judgmental. But at the same time, you know, one must learn from what's happened, examine the evidence and what's actually happened since then to look at policy moving forwards.
Professor, just break it down for us in a bit more clarity when you come to that conclusion of the lockdown not working and how a lockdown versus lesser lockdown conditions affected the spread. So what was the case under a complete lockdown versus lower tiers of lockdown, and what factors within that did you look at to arrive at that conclusion?
Okay, so we reviewed the evidence of the effectiveness of lockdown at slowing the spread of the pandemic by mapping the rate of new daily infections against the various lockdown strategies, starting with the mitigation practices that were put in place before we went into level 5 lockdown, and then all the way through the various stages up until now. Now, what one would expect to see if lockdown 5, level 5, was effective would be a sharp decrease in the rate of new daily infections 7 to 14 days after that lockdown was implemented. There's a delay, you see, because the disease has a 5 to 6 day average incubation period, and of course there's at the time a little bit of a delay for test results to be released and so on. So you wouldn't expect on day 1, for example, for there to be a huge decrease in the rate of new daily infections, but you would expect 7 to 10, 14 maybe days later, a sharp reduction in the rate of new daily infections, and that just didn't happen. The other thing one would expect to see if hard lockdown was effective would be the sort of reverse. In other words, when you relax those regulations and you allow gatherings, you allow businesses to open, you allow people to leave their houses for things other than essential services, you would expect the rate of new daily infections to increase again. And again, when you look at the caseload over time, you see that just didn't happen. You had a relatively steady rate of new daily infections through stages 5, levels 5, level 4, and halfway through level 3. And then around about halfway through level 3 lockdown, it actually started to we had fewer new daily infections. You know, we had the curve flattened off, as it were. It's that phrase that we were getting very used to, flattening the curve. The curve flattened halfway through level 3. As indeed these restrictions were being relaxed. Okay, so this is where the claim comes from. We're looking for evidence for the effectiveness of a hard lockdown, and we just didn't find it.
Could a factor, would you have considered something like a degree of herd immunity being achieved, which then results in lower infections as you go down the tiers?
Well, it's interesting. I think we might be seeing that now in the township areas, in the informal settlement areas, but not so much in the suburban areas. So data isn't so forthcoming for many of the provinces, but the Western Cape have pretty good data coming for all the smaller subregions. And what you're finding there is this second wave that we're getting now is far more pronounced in the suburban areas than it is in the informal settlements. So if you compare, for example, Khayelitsha in the Western Cape with the southern suburbs in the Western Cape, you'll see that the southern suburbs is now getting 3.5 times the number of new daily cases that it was at the peak of the first wave of infections, whereas Khayelitsha isn't even getting as many new infections per day as it was during that first wave. So what you're seeing is when you break it down, is the difference between the kind of more Western context where lockdown is more effective because people are able to isolate in a far more effective way, versus this sort of high population density living that gives rise to a greater number of infections. And the upside to that for South Africans is that, you know, probably a lot more people than we know about got the infection the first time around, and as a result, fewer people are going to get it second time around because they already have built up some kind of immunity. Now, it's rather complicated. There's a new strain, well, a new variant that has come in that is more contagious, so we might end up with more infections than one would hope for. But in any case, it does look like some kind of herd immunity might have been built up amongst the informal settlements, the more high population density areas. However, I don't think that happens so much in the suburbs.
My question on that will then go to, does that in any way not undermine the hypotheses that you had put forward earlier to say that, you know, as we went down and as things opened up, there were less infections and we didn't see an increase in the infection rate. If that is based on a kind of herd immunity being achieved, then that doesn't necessarily negate the benefits of a hard lockdown?
No, well, you see, the herd immunity is only achieved when the lockdown is entirely ineffective. So what a lockdown is supposed to do is prevent people from getting the virus at all, or try and prevent as many people as possible from getting the virus. Now, if the virus, if a lockdown is ineffective, that is to say, if lots of people are getting the virus, and as many people were getting the virus as would have done if we hadn't have locked down, then herd immunity kicks in because lots of people have got their immunity because they unknowingly, in many cases, will have got COVID-19.
Mm-hmm. You spoke, Professor, earlier on about the pressure that South Africa was under and obviously the frenzy, the fear at that point in time dealing with a very difficult crisis and hard decisions to make. You mentioned, and it is mentioned in your research, that there were one of your fellow academics called off the back of wildly inaccurate COVID-19 mortality projections at that stage of 331,000 deaths in South Africa. Now, are we at this point in time, in retrospect, to say that that was based on a kind of modelling, and we just accept that within the context of whoever did that research, or are we to question that kind of modelling and given its role in formulation of these hard lockdowns?
Modelling is an inexact science. And unfortunately, the best scientists in the world don't have a crystal ball. And all politicians and policymakers can do is act on the best information that they have at the time. It turned out to be wildly inaccurate. And of course, those exceptionally high projections came early on in the pandemic, and they were revised down and continued to be revised down as we moved through, as we got a better idea of how deadly the virus was. I mean, there are two things, really, that one needs to consider when considering the death toll. One is the number of people that are going to contract the virus, and the other is how deadly that virus is. Now, in the case of COVID-19, I think they overestimated how deadly that virus was going to be, partly because, particularly in African countries, because when those initial projections were made, the extent to which this affects the elderly wasn't quite appreciated, or primarily affects the elderly, wasn't quite appreciated at that time. And this is a very young continent. Throughout Africa, only 3% of the population are over the age of 65. And in South Africa, it's more like 7 or 8%. These are a much younger population than, say, Italy or the UK, where we're looking at more like 30% of the population. So there's a sort of a lack of understanding, early understanding of the virus, and it's very frequent for there to be miscalculations on quite how many people are going to die once they contract it, and that's what happened. That's what happened here. There was an overestimation. And it was revised, and policies were revised. And now we look at the situation we're in. We're at level one, restrictions, and it does not look from the media that I read anyway. The noises that are being made by government don't look towards pushing us back into that hard lockdown style scenario. It looks like, yes, they are picking out hotspots and they are trying to prevent large gatherings like on the beaches and so on, and they're restricting drinking. But these are quite sensible measures. You know, alcohol does give rise to the kind of behavior that is very conducive to the spreading of virus. It reduces inhibitions. You know, it encourages people to stay out late and gather in large groups. And all of these things are extremely bad for COVID-19. So placing restrictions on alcohol over the weekends, I think, is a very sensible intervention. And so long as government learns from past mistakes, and even if those mistakes were not necessarily inevitable but understandable, you know, we can be quite glad about the current situation. I think I don't have any current complaints, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Professor, then just you know, a last question. I don't know if you venture into that terrain, but the question again coming up is, if you again point to you know, a pressure in such a decision, I mean, would you then be questioning you know, South Africa's independence in making informed decision about a lockdown, if, you know, international bodies or whoever it may be might put such considerable pressure on a government to be able to adopt a particular policy that, as you mentioned from the outset, can be seen to be clearly detrimental, and in retrospect is clearly detrimental? Should serious questions be asked about that?
I think questions should be asked, for sure. You know, politicians are there to be held accountable. On the other hand, there is an extent to which bodies like the WHO, the World Health Organization, should be listened to. And, you know, if our government had completely ignored the recommendations of the World Health Organization and gone the other way, you know, that would probably be a more dangerous move for governments, you see. So there's a real balancing act. I think that, you know, evidence-based practice these days, evidence-based medicine says, look, you must bear in mind the contextual conditions of your population. And I don't think the initial regulations from the World Health Organization did that sufficiently. And I think that perhaps, you know, government, you know, we have some excellent researchers working on this. Prof. Karim, who has been a major part of the COVID task force since day one, is a true world-leading expert epidemiologist. And, you know, government will listen to homegrown talent like Professor Karim too. The government was very much stuck between a rock and a hard place. Personally, I think that they made the wrong decision. But in the same situation, I would not have done that. I would not have put us down into a level five lockdown. As our research showed right back from March, we recommended not doing this. You know, we were very forthcoming in how silly many of the regulations were. I mean, some of the more fine-grained regulations were outright daft. You know, restricting exercise between 6 a.m. and 9 a.m. was utterly absurd. There was no evidence base whatsoever for the cigarette ban. You know, these things were just ad hoc. I mean, banning of selling open-toed shoes. I mean, it's almost laughable when you. Well, it's not even almost laughable. It's a complete farce. I tell my former colleagues in the UK about this, and they just struggle to understand. You know, some of these things, they just seem like regulations were being made up for the sake of making regulations. Borderline, you know, authoritarian government, you know. But you know, the real core of it was really to try and reduce, increase social distancing, reduce social contact as much as possible. And I think that, you know, South Africans would do well to remember that that is still necessary. You know, we really should still be trying to keep our social contact down as much as possible, keep wearing your masks, make sure you wash your hands and sanitize, do the things that you're supposed to be doing. I'm not saying, you know, don't go outside over Christmas at all, but, you know, avoid large groups and be careful and vigilant and protect your loved ones.
Indeed, looking back critically, skeptically, based on evidence on what has transpired, but at the same time sounding off on a positive note on the current policies and everything that has been reported about the current government response, avoiding full-scale lockdowns to the emergence of a second wave. Professor Benjamin T.H. Smart, leader of the Future of Health and Medicine Research Theme at the Institute for the Future of Knowledge, and also Associate Professor of Philosophy at the University of Johannesburg. I thank you so much for your time this evening. Have yourself a great week and holidays ahead, Professor.
Great pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Goodbye.